What's that called?
Tubing.
Snow tubing.
I don't think they call it.
What do you mean, like a toboggan?
No, like you get like an inflatable tube.
You want like a sled?
Like a sledding?
No, like a tube.
So then, why is it not snow tubing?
Because I don't think that's what it's called.
What is it called?
It's called tubing.
But when you say tubing down here, we're tubing a river.
Right. But when you say tubing next to a mountain that's covered in snow, the implication is that's what you want to do. It's a regional thing. You don't have to specify.
Oh my gosh!
All right. Is it time to go?
Yeah. Welcome back.
Yeah. Do the thing.
To the Beyond Sunday podcast, where we're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff, and with me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
Hey, Patrick.
And Katie Phillips.
Hello.
Hello.
Did you forget your line there for a minute?
Yep.
Yeah. And your line is high.
Hey, hey. Yes. Hi.
How do I greet people?
Hola.
There we go. Excellent.
Yeah. Perfect. We're broadening our...
Why is this table rocking today? Anybody else notice this? We're having...
No, I'm not...
We're having some studio issues here, folks. I apologize.
With our table. Yeah. It's our high-tech equipment here. A table.
A table. Yes.
All right, we've got some news to get into before we take a look at our big topic.
All right.
We're going to take a look at stewardship today.
Ooh.
So I've got actually two pieces of news.
All right.
Because one will lead us into our topic. But first...
You're stewarding your news well, Patrick.
First, do you wash your legs? This is a question that is...
Wait, what?
Going viral on Twitter right now, and that is, in the shower, do you wash your legs?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Like, if you take a washcloth and soap to your legs.
That is correct. Do you wash your legs with the washcloth?
I also shave them,
A loofah, you know, things like that. Yeah, do you wash your legs?
I do not shave my legs. I do not wash my legs every time that I'm in the shower.
I do. I mean, have to wash my feet.
If the like, defi- oh, that's a weird thing.
No, like, how is that weird?
I don't know. It just seems weird.
I do it at night, like, before I go to sleep. I have to wash my feet if I don't take a shower at night. I take a shower in the morning.
So you do, like, a foot washing?
Wait, so
yes.
If you take a shower...
I wear flip-flops. I love to wear flip-flops
and sandals. If you take a shower at night, you wake up and wash your feet in the morning?
No. She does not take a shower at night.
Oh. If I do not take a shower at night and I shower in the morning...
She takes a page out of Jesus' handbook and does a foot washing.
Yeah, but she washes her own feet. That's not the same. If she were, like, washing her husband's feet or something.
I bathe my children every night.
I wash Sophia's legs every time I give her a bath.
But you, not every time, wash the legs.
No, because you
do the soap runs down.
Yeah, you do the soap up top and it runs down.
Yeah, gravity does the work for you.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, I bet...
Science is my friend.
Anything south of the equator is probably not as clean as you think it is. Yes.
I feel like we need another way to phrase that.
No, I think that's pretty good. South of your waist, below your waist.
I understood what you meant by it. I'm just saying that we should say it differently. It did not need further explanation.
Okay.
Or maybe it does.
I think it's fine. All right. Well, some people says, hey, do you only wash half your car? When you wash your car, do you not wash the doors?
Why would... That's not the same thing.
Yeah, and I only wash my car like once every 2 months.
Right. If that. This is not equals.
Yeah. So on Twitter, around 800,000 people have voted in this poll. You wash your legs?
This is what we can get 800,000 people to care about. Okay. Yeah.
What percentage of people do you think said, yes, they wash their legs in the shower?
Every time?
I mean, this is the question. Do you wash your legs when you take
less
a shower?
Less than 30%.
Less than 30%? I was going to say less than 40% said they do wash their legs every time.
Wow. You do not have faith in humanity, I guess.
No, I have faith in gravity.
80%.
Liars.
According to Twitter.
All of them are liars.
Wash their legs every time.
Twitter is not a randomized controlled study. I would like to see a double-blind study of this
At youth group on Sunday, we did ask this question, do you wash your legs when you take a shower?
Uh-huh.
And probably around 20% of the kids said they did not wash their legs.
Okay. I think the other 80% are liars.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know,
going on record right now.
Yes. Although one of them did, Craig, did give us a demonstration of what he does in the shower.
That sounds inappropriate.
That I did not want to hear. But he does not wash his feet. So, you know, because gravity covers
my gosh.
The feet.
No, it doesn't. Your feet. Oh.
The feet are way worse than your legs. Your legs are in jeans all day. What are they doing? Nothing. All right, well, this is from...
This is getting really uncomfortable. We need a new topic.
This is a good topic. This is fine.
This is fine, Patrick.
This is from Joshua Zechner. Director of Cosmic and Clinical Research in Dermatology at Mount Sinai Hospital.
That's a made-up thing. Okay.
He said, unless your legs are visibly soiled, you don't need to wash them. See? Right, the cleanser.
Visible soiledness. Yeah. I'm good. Gravity. Done.
Overscrubbing your legs can strip the skin of essential oils and lead to skin barrier disruption and inflammation.
I am a breeding ground for essential oils. That's what the doctor just said. He's a made-up doctor, but it's fine. That's what he just said.
So
that's not true. Dermatology is not a made-up thing. It's a real thing. Sorry to all of our dermatologist listeners.
Yeah, there's a whole show about it right now called Dr. Pimple Popper.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's about a person who pops pimples.
Are they a dermatologist, or are they just like a person who likes to pop
pimples? It's a dermatologist.
Okay.
Like, people watch this. There's videos on YouTube.
This is so
where you
weird.
Can watch people pop pimples.
Gross. Why would we do that? That's disgusting. Yeah. And you thought I was weird for not washing my legs.
I never
every
said
time.
You were weird. I'm actually.
Yeah, you didn't answer the question.
I'm in greater agreement with you than Katie.
Yeah.
I'm not washing my feet every night. That's for sure.
The 80% are liars. That's just the way it is.
I agree. Yes.
I mean,
they want people to think they're washing their legs every time.
I can understand washing your feet if you're walking around in flip-flops all day. But I also feel like in the shower, the water is doing the washing of the feet for me. I don't feel the need to, like, actively scrub my feet.
Hmm.
This is my scrubbing sound effect for our podcast listeners at home.
This is me not judging.
My feet are inside my shoes. You have no room to judge.
All right, well, this is from the New York Times. New news.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Did the New York Times not comment on the leg washing story?
That was from Forbes.
Forbes actually commented on that? Good Lord. All right.
Let he who is without Yeezys cast the first stone.
Without what?
Yeezys. What's that?
Oh, y'all are too old. Y'all are too old.
You're older than both of us.
I work with teenagers. I'm still cool and hip.
All right, what's a Yeezy?
Yeezys are Air Yeezys. It's a type of footwear.
But these like Air Jordans?
It's like a tennis shoe. Sneaker,
okay.
Yes.
Air
Made from
Yeezys.
Kanye West, who also goes by Yeezy.
Kanye West goes by Yeezy?
Yes.
Is Yeezy the new nickname for Kanye?
Don't look to Kanye West for like things that make sense. Okay,
that's
you know.
Reasonable. Okay.
All right, so here's the byline.
All right, so
should shoes. Pastors wear $5,000 sneakers?
Yes. Wait.
All right.
No.
There's been soul searching recently over materialism.
Ah, soul searching. That's a little pun.
Of
don't.
Worship. Yes. So we got a couple people, pastors here. The guy who just baptized Justin Bieber.
Ooh, nice.
Has been wearing
Saving the Biebs.
Nike Air Fear of God sneakers, which sell for about $500.
Wait. The pastor is wearing a pair of shoes called the Fear of God.
Nike Air Fear of God.
Excellent. Yes. All right.
John Gray, he's a pastor in South Carolina, wearing sneakers of Kanye West, cost $5,000.
Do you know where he is in South Carolina? Because I actually know that name.
South Carolina is all I can tell you.
Okay, I'm pretty sure I knew the congregation.
And another pastor in Los Angeles has been seen wearing $795 pants with $1,900 Gucci bag.
Ayo!
Yes. And so now...
The pastor bag.
These things have come to attention by an Instagram account called Preachers in Sneakers.
Excellent.
Yes.
All right.
And they basically show pastors and men and women of God and like, what are they wearing and how much does it cost?
This sounds like a good use of Instagram and our time. Okay. All right. I'm on board.
But is it also a good use of that church's financial resources?
I can tell you right now that my shoes cost about $50 about 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. My pants were on sale, if I'm remembering this correctly. So they were about $40 about 5 years ago.
Okay.
And the shirt was a gift, so I don't know how much this shirt cost.
And you're saving all that money on body wash.
Yeah, so, you know. So, you're welcome.
Yeah, so it's like...
I just want to be clear. I do use soap in the shower.
Yeah, it's just only on the top part.
Because gravity does the work. I feel like I'm coming off way more disgusting than I am.
Yes. So, obviously, Preachers and Sneakers now has over 100,000 people that follow Preachers and Sneakers, and it gets...
Does at Beyond Sunday follow? Or Beyond underscore Sunday? Do we follow?
We do not.
Okay.
But it gets contentious on the comment section on what is appropriate for a pastor to wear for clothing. Is it appropriate for a pastor to wear $5,000 shoes?
Mm.
So this is what
I don't think it's appropriate for anyone to wear $5,000 shoes, regardless of what their occupation is.
Correct. Like, I don't know that I would ever wear $5,000 shoes. To me, that's just ridiculous.
Right.
Like, who would spend $5,000
on shoes? The shoes are ultimately, you know, irrelevant to the topic. Is it appropriate for a pastor to have an extravagant wardrobe, car, house, diet, whatever you want to put the vacation.
Extravagant diet. I'm curious what that looks like.
Sure, there's food out there that costs a lot of money.
That's fair. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So you kind of said this earlier, Pastor David. You said, doesn't matter what job you have. here's the deal. So clearly, the pastor's job, he's making money. He is, right?
The pastor's job is to make money? No, I might rephrase that.
No. The pastor has a job. Yes. His job is to preach, that he is leading
this church.
His or
her job is to preach and lead the church, yes.
He's getting paid for that.
Yes.
When he was hired by his church said, this is how much we're going to pay you,
right.
And he signed on the line.
Right.
Like,
here's
my contract.
The church came up with a fair market value for the work that
now,
the pastor is doing. Yeah.
Now,
to me,
in fairness,
you
not,
can spend your money how you want to spend your money.
That is how a lot of Lutheran churches may operate, but that is not how every church
it's
operates. Sometimes
yep.
churches operate by a pastor starting his own church,
yep.
then declaring his own salary
yep.
from the tithe from that church, because he is the central figure. So that's not how every church operates, where the congregation decides how much they're going to pay the pastor.
Yeah, so that is within the realm of the Lutheran church. That's how we would do it.
Right.
And in fact, within the Lutheran church, we even have within each region what we call synods. We have compensation guidelines. And, you know, we're maybe going a little bit more in the weeds than we meant to here. But so, you know, our region says, here's what a fair market price for pastors in your area would be based on their years of experience,
right.
based on other salaries in your area, based on cost of living in your area, et cetera, et cetera. So we even have someone else who's kind of saying this is where you should start a conversation about salary. But Patrick's right. You know, pastors in a lot of other traditions do not have that. Sometimes it is just a pastor saying, this is what I think I'm worth, or, you know, or I started this congregation, so this is what I'm going to get paid. Mm-hmm. You know, there are not the same kind of controls and checks and balances that we have set up.
Okay, but here's the deal.
Yeah, I don't think Joel Osteen's church is really determining his financial worth.
Yeah, probably not.
Right, but I mean, the people of the church can decide, hey, I'm not going to come here anymore.
Sure.
And then their money doesn't go toward that pastor's salary or whatever anymore.
Sure.
I don't know.
So you're saying...
Like, I'm saying it's
you don't
their
care
money.
How they spend their money.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, like, it's your money. I mean, if I want to go out and buy a new purse.
Yeah.
Now, it's not, I don't buy $5,000 purses because to me, again, that's a waste of money. But for
I
those people
to buy
who do.
For my purse,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, like, there's people who do, and that's fine. If that's how you choose to spend your money, go for it. Like,
yeah.
I, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So I.
Why are they doing it to be fancy, like to look better
right.
than thou? Then I that might be a problem. Mm-hmm. And the people in that congregation, better than thou, was that the right? Better than whatever.
Than thee.
I think with this though, yes,
but
I don't know. It does. We don't get into like necessarily in this New York Times article exactly where their heart of the pastor is.
Right.
Except. Pastor Gray from South Carolina will say, I don't think you can judge a man's heart based on their attire. What a person wears doesn't determine what their value system is.
But where your treasure is, there your heart will be
yeah,
also.
I think it's pretty obvious if you walk through Scripture, and we're going to talk about surgery in a section, Jesus is concerned with how people spend their money.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a pastor to necessarily go to something to live extravagantly
mm-hmm.
yeah.
would be against, I think, what the core message of how Jesus operates when it comes to finances.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean every leader in Scripture does not have an extravagant lifestyle.
Right.
But I would say it's hard to go to your congregation to talk about the need of giving, the need of temperance, the need of humility, wearing clothes that cost more than some people's cars in your congregation.
Sure.
Right.
I think that's pretty vain and arrogant.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, I think there are two sides to this, right? I think if we're using this as an opportunity to shame pastors for having a luxury in their life, like that is not...
Right.
That's not helpful, right? I think Katie has a fair point. If a pastor chooses to save their money or use their money and do X, Y, or Z, fine, you'll use your money responsibly. But what is that extravagant lifestyle, and how is that representing the faith that we are being called to represent? And how is that? I mean, there's a reason, you know, within the Lutheran Church, we wear albs during worship. You know, it's not just because we like adding extra layers in the middle of Texas heat, but it's so that you're quote unquote clothed with Christ rather than anything that you're wearing yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the theory is then you are being stripped away, and it's really that Christ is present through you. And, you know, I don't think that's the only way to do that, but I think we do have to be very conscious and make intentional choices about what we are presenting
mm-hmm.
when because we are representing Christ. As pastors, we are representing Christ to the world. That is
right.
part of our call. And don't think for a minute that the pastors in this article did not make an intentional choice.
Right.
I mean, they are intentionally representing something, whatever they might want that to be.
And I'm not going to here to say, like, any of these pastors are bad guys. I don't know any of them personally. But I do think there is a line, and we're unsure where that is. Is it wrong for a pastor to own a private jet that the congregation has bought him?
Yeah.
I'd say yes. You don't need that.
I would say it's unnecessary.
Yeah, you don't need a private jet.
Yeah.
You know, you can fly on a plane like everybody else in your congregation.
Yep.
You know, so... But where is that line drawn? How big of a house is too big of a house for a man or woman of God?
Anything that's bigger than mine.
Yeah.
Which is what everybody will say, right? Like, mine is okay, but X, Y, or Z is...
Sure.
And it's a hard thing to draw, and it really depends on congregations, too, because pastors are not free from the social depravity of jealousy, right? And so we see a pastor who's in a wealthier congregation or in a wealthier area who might have the ability to afford a house or the ability to afford a different car or, you know, whatever.
Right.
And that's – so we as pastors fall into that trap as well of saying, well, they're the problem, not me.
Sure.
I think we too often get ourselves caught up in trying to compare ourselves to one another rather than trying to recenter ourselves on the heart of Christ, which is what – we ultimately want this to be about.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And I think, we can be honest with ourselves too. The easiest money to spend is other people's money.
Sure.
You know, I'm an expert on what other people should be doing with their money, mm-hmm. not so much with my own.
Yeah.
And then that maybe gives us a good direction here into stewardship on how we approach finances as a congregation, as people, as individuals, and scripturally, how money matters with the things. The most, you know, our common misconception in the Bible is money is the root of all evil. It's a common misquote, right?
It is, yeah.
It's love of money is the root of all evil.
Right.
So I think, I would look at extravagance in a man or woman of God as a potential love of money or love of extravagance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a red flag to me.
Sure.
Now, it doesn't mean it is, but I do think it is a potential red flag.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's it's something that we have to be constantly vigilant about. Particularly as people who are serving the church and representing this, but as people who are just trying to serve God in our daily life. Like, how are we representing our faith through the choices that we make with our money?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
That matters.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about stewardship.
Let's do it.
What do we got?
Webster's Dictionary defines stewardship. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know what Webster's Dictionary
defines. So what is stewardship?
I just told you, Webster's Dictionary.
No. Like, what is our definition of stewardship?
Oh, okay. When I talk about stewardship, and when we talk about it here at Lord of Life, we talk about kind of both your giving of your time, how you give your time to serve God, and how you give of your resources to serve God. And we talk about that particularly because we believe that everything that we have is a gift from God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so when we give back to God, we're not actually giving out of our own, we're giving back out of what God has given us.
Yeah, I think in the root, the word steward is somebody who is a caretaker of someone else's property or finances.
Yep, so and ship is a large sailing vessel, and so
and there you go. Stew is like a hearty soup.
Yeah,
so
we got it.
So I think we got it.
I'm glad we solved that mystery. Does it clear it up for you, Katie?
Yes. Yeah,
so it's like a hearty soup on a ship that you are in charge of.
Yep,
but it's not yours.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's go back to the gifts part.
Okay,
of that,
gifts part.
Because I love that. I love thinking and knowing that God has given each of us gifts, and they're not all the same. They're mm-hmm. they're different. Not everybody is the same gift in which to use to serve and to give to the world. And I think that is the same financially. You know, not everybody makes the same amount of money or has the same stuff. And I think that's important to look at as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if we take a look at, you know, the idea of like giving of gifts or our talents. So what does that look like specifically in the congregational setting? So if somebody's giving of their gifts, how does that work?
When you say giving of their gifts, we're talking about like talents, time, right? I'm
talking about, so not just your financial check on a Sunday morning, but you're giving of something more.
Yeah, so, you know,
of self.
Within a congregation, you might serve as a hospital visitation person, and you give of your time outside of your regular job or the work that you're doing with your family, and you go and visit people who are sick in the hospital on behalf of the congregation. Or you might serve as a volunteer for Vacation Bible School. You might give up a week of your vacation from your job, and rather than taking a personal vacation where you can relax and rejuvenate, you go and serve as a mentor on a high school mission trip, which is neither relaxing but maybe rejuvenating, we hope.
I think they're fun.
They're fun. It doesn't mean it's relaxing. Those are two very different things.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So I think all of those, you know, maybe you're a musician, you have a talent for music, and so you share those gifts by participating in the choir or playing in a band. Maybe you help lead worship through mm-hmm. leading prayers or doing scripture readings. Maybe you just serve on committees. You know, maybe your time is best kept or best used watching over a church's finances.
Sure.
And helping to use your gifts in accounting to support the church that way.
Or being a Sunday school teacher.
Yeah, I mean, we could go on and on. Yeah. I think all of those are ways that, you know, you give of the time out of the gifts and talents that you have. One of the things that the churches have not always done well, but we're trying to recapture, is to help people use the gifts that they already have within the context of giving those back to God, right? And so you're doing these great works, or we see you doing these things out in the world. We want you to help utilize those skills in a way that benefits God as well, mm-hmm. and benefits God's kingdom. So that might not mean, we've talked about this before too, just because you're a teacher in the real world doesn't mean you want to be a Sunday school teacher mm-hmm. Here, because you deal with little kids all the time. And you're like, it's my weekend. I don't want to do that seven right. days a week. And we get that. But there are ways in which we can utilize those gifts to help you be mm-hmm. a part of a curriculum team, or help right. you be a part of something else that's meaningful and uses the skills that you have.
Okay. Yeah, so I think we all can identify, you know, there's gifts given. I think sometimes within our congregation, some people find it easier to say, like, I don't want to do any of those things. I just want to write a check.
Sure.
You know, like, my work is busy, my life is busy, I work 80 hours a week, so here's a check and I'm done.
Yeah.
So, you know, is that okay? What do you think about that?
It would depend on how you define okay. I mean, like,
do you think that is living into a stewardship lifestyle?
I don't think that it, no, if stewardship is your lifestyle, then no, it's not living into a stewardship lifestyle.
Okay.
I think it is a step in the direction of stewardship. It is, it is better than nothing. And I think it's an awareness of, you know, of the resources that God has given you and how God is calling you. But if you're writing the check in order to get out of something else, mm-hmm. I feel like we're missing the point, right?
Sure.
The point is not that God just wants more money. The point is that God yeah. wants your life. God wants you. God wants to be in relationship with you. And that comes through service, through partnering, through giving of our financial resources as well. And so if we're using either of those, right? Because some people too will say, well, I can't give financially, so I give exclusively of my time, which is fine. I get that too. Mm-hmm. But if we're using either of those as an escape from the other,
mm-hmm. sure.
Mm-hmm. then we're missing the point, because yeah. it's not about oh, if I give more money then I don't have to give my time. It's about God wanting to be in relationship and calling you back into that.
And I think as far as finances go, the Bible says to give 10% of what you earn to the church, to God, right?
To the temple, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Okay. So, and I think that number scares people. I think sure. a lot of people go, 10%, yikes, like, what is that? Then that freaks sure. people out.
Well, is that before taxes or after
right.
taxes?
Right, you know,
is that,
you right. know, sure. is that, right, exactly.
Yeah.
So, I think it's really important to just start somewhere. I mean, then that's something that I've said from the very beginning. Anything. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter. You know what I mean? And if it's this month, you are pinching pennies to, you know, you're not going out to eat, you're not buying anything, this month is tight.
Yeah.
And it's $5 right. in the offering plate. Like, okay, like, nobody is going to say that is not enough money to give to the church. You know, right. you're not doing your job.
Right.
Like, yeah. that's not, start somewhere, you know, and I think that is just nice to hear every yeah. once in a while.
Well,
you know?
Let's face it too, we live in a culture in which people are overwhelmed by debt mm-hmm. in all sorts of circumstances, mm-hmm. right? Whether that's in homes that they couldn't have actually afforded, or whether they're in credit card debt because they needed to pay off medical bills or whatever. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of very legitimate financial concerns that are out there
right.
that people need to address, and that people then feel like prevent them from being able to give.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's not to say that every situation is the same, but I think that in most of those situations, there's an opportunity to be generous,
mm-hmm.
even within very difficult situations mm-hmm. where you're trying to pay things back and you're trying to get, there are opportunities to be generous. and this is something that the church has not captured very well, is that, you know, within the last 50 years, within the United States in particular, opportunities to be generous have popped up outside of the congregation.
Right. Sure.
For a long time, the way to support the poor in your community or people who were homeless or people who were sick or anything was all through the church. Mm-hmm. And now there's however many individual nonprofits out there. I mean, here in the Woodlands, right, we have Interfaith of the Woodlands, and we have Habitat for Humanity, and we have the Montgomery County Food Bank. Mm-hmm. Like, all of these people are looking for resources. And so the church is not the only institution right. that does that. But being generous through the church, I think, gives us a unique connection to the call that God has for us. Sure. Because part of the call of what Katie was describing in the Old Testament, when God says, you know, bring the tithe into the temple, that we're doing this work together, it's not just that God needs your money in order to build up the kingdom,
right?
It's that when we give to one another, we as a community are able to experience the worship of God, and we're able to do things out in the community, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're able to sustain a congregation where we can worship and gather and spread the good news that Jesus Christ is crucified and risen for you so that you might have life. We're able to do that through these financial gifts that come in, and we're able to take care of people in the community. And at Lord of Life, we have close to $50,000 a year that are going out into the community because of generosity that comes into us. And so we're able to turn those around and use that to our community's benefit. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're not going to get the same message when you go to, if you give your money to Habitat for Humanity, yeah, you're going to have a great impact. I do not want to disparage that effort at all. But it's not the same impact as having a place where people can gather to witness the gospel of Jesus Christ.
But I think, attached to that, I think one of the things, the way the church has kind of failed in the last 50 years and these other places have risen to take its place, is that the churches did not do a good job of kind of explaining to people that these things directly.
Absolutely.
That they did not do a good job of, like, by investing in these things, eternal consequences are happening. These things are mm-hmm. affecting not just our community, but you know, heaven, hell, you know, big things going on through the impact of ministry of the church, and instead have framed it like, well, the church needs a new air conditioner.
Right.
Yep.
And said, like, well, okay, I can write a check to get the church a new air conditioner, or I can write a check to this organization that's going to put a family directly in a home.
Right.
And
right.
that seems more life-giving to me right now.
Sure.
Right.
And so I think, and not to say the churches need air conditioners. We have an air conditioner on right now. It's awesome. You know, but I think when we go at it from churches of, like, we have these material needs that we need you congregations right. to meet.
Yes.
Right.
That's where the churches fail.
Well, part yeah. of that, you know, when you look at research about stewardship too, generationally, people give for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And so generally, and this is a generalization, but generally the older you are, the more likely you are to care about institutional needs like an air conditioner.
Sure.
And the younger you are, the more likely you are to care about those ways in which you are causing a direct impact in the world. And sure. so the church has not done a good job of telling our story appropriately to say, like, this is why this matters, and this is why this mm-hmm. this is why the air conditioner makes a difference. You know, it's not because we want to be cool, though in Texas we certainly do. It's because this helps us change lives.
Sure.
Right.
And I would absolutely agree. Other institutions have done a much better job of updating their marketing strategy, for lack of a better term, to appeal to people who want to give and have a direct impact than churches have. Because mm-hmm. churches were in a country club kind of mindset for many years of, well, people are members here, and so, and in some congregations this is still the practice, right? You're a member, and so you have essentially dues. Like, you have an amount that's told to you how much you owe based on, you know, there are churches where you hand in a W-2 and they say, okay, this is the amount that we expect you to pay. There was a church in California that my previous senior pastor interned at. This was back in the 80s when he interned at. But that was a church that he went and visited. It was a famous church where a lot of the Hollywood elites went, and they had everybody's W-2s posted on the wall. And so he went around and he could see, there's Denzel Washington's W-2. That's how much Denzel Washington made last year. And, you know, so there are churches that do that. That is not mm-hmm. our practice at Lord of Life, because we believe it's a deeper connection about you and God
yeah.
and your relationship there.
And also, that's crazy.
Right. A little bit.
I think it's crazy.
It's rooted in, you know, a biblical understanding of give 10% of your income. And so what they're doing is holding you accountable to what is that income.
Well, I mean, to call back to another thing, preachers and sneakers, I think, is maybe saying we're holding pastors and men of God accountable to the clothing that they wear.
And I have no problem with, they can come and take my picture and hold me accountable for the mini fashion faux pas.
We'll send in a picture.
Yeah, absolutely. but the intention, you know, if we want to look at this with the best of intentions, I'm not planning to institute this policy at any church that I would serve now or in the future. But if we look at it the best of intentions, it would be, hey, we want an opportunity to hold you accountable. Right? And the purpose being here, if you go to a doctor and the doctor tells you, hey, you have cancer, you know, you don't want to give the doctor a piece of your medical history so that they can try to fix you. You want to give them every single ounce of information that they have about you.
The difference is I don't go to the doctor and I give the patient sitting next to me every piece of my medical history.
Sure.
The W-2 is available to everyone. Anyone.
Putting the W-2 on the wall is weird. I'm not arguing with that. But if you go to the doctor, if you go to the spiritual doctor, right, you want to give every part of your spiritual history. Mm-hmm. And that includes our stewardship, right? And so there are conversations around who does hold you accountable. We have to have people in our lives who can speak truth to us and hold us accountable to those spiritual practices that we want to be developing. And stewardship is a spiritual practice.
I guess to challenge that, though, scripturally, Jesus is going to say, when you give, do not let your right hand know what your left hand is doing.
Sure.
So, I mean, this is, if I myself am not supposed to really even know how generous I'm being, why should anyone else know how generous I'm being?
I would say, it's not about you knowing how generous you're... I think the intention of that is not to focus on, look how generous I am. But that doesn't mean that we don't need a coach to help us learn how to be generous. Mm-hmm. When I used to run track, my coach wouldn't let me look at my times after races because the time wasn't important. Mm-hmm. But he knew what my times were, and he knew what I needed to be doing to improve and to get better. And as long as I was improving and getting better, that was what mattered. And so I think there's an element of that that can apply here, right? It's not about reaching some perfection, oh, I'm now generous enough. It's about having a spiritual coach who can walk alongside of you and to say, how does this affecting your life? Mm-hmm. Because not taking those opportunities to be generous, not stewarding our resources in a faithful way, has a spiritual toll on our lives. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think we need coaches in that process.
Mm-hmm. I do like a quote from C.S. Lewis that I like theoretically more than I like practically in my own life.
Sure.
And that is, when it comes to giving, you should always give more than you can afford, so that your life should be physically altered by the amount of giving that you're doing. You're not able to eat out as much as you want or buy the clothes you want or go see the movies you want because of generosity. Mm-hmm. And I do like that quote. Again, I like it in theory,
right?
It's harder in practice,
right?
Yeah. But I do like that quote from C.S. Lewis. I think that is a good idea of what generosity should look like.
Yeah, and it's a way to start too. Like, I mean, it's hard to carry out in practice, but you know, if you're in one of those places where you're trying to think, how can I start being generous? How can I take that first step? As Katie mentioned, right? You know, go through the grocery store, and think about what thing can I put back, and then instead of just not spending that money, take, you know, the $3 or whatever it was for that bag of Doritos or the soda or whatever it is. I don't know. There's no judgment here. Whatever that might be that you can put back and give that in the offering plate on Sunday. You know, see how that feels. You know, do you and your family survive without that thing for the week? Are there ways in which your family is perhaps blessed and enriched because you went without that thing that week? Right. And this is, again, this is the danger that I think we run into with some of this pastors and sneakers or whatever that was thing. Mm. You know, there's this danger of like, oh, well, if I give more to the church, I'm going to be blessed more in my life.
Sure.
Yes, but that does not mean a financial blessing.
Right.
It does not mean that giving to the church is going to make you personally wealthy or that giving to God is going to make you personally wealthy. Mm-hmm. It means that you are going to be deeply and richly blessed because generosity begets generosity. Mm. And then, did I just say baguettes? Is that baguettes? Yeah.
Baguettes or
Italian loaf? Anyway.
Begats.
Begats. That's it. No. Syllables are hard.
All right. Anything else we want to say here about stewardship?
I'm sure there's something else we should say.
Probably.
I feel like I've been on a rant for a while. What do you guys think?
I think stewardship definitely matters. I still have conflict in my head of like Jesus' direct words are, don't let your right hand know what your left hand is doing. And I feel like being as open and honest about who everybody is giving may or may not be the right decision. Because I think it can lead to comparisons. It can lead to...
I'll just clarify. I wouldn't advocate putting the W-2 on the wall, right? Yeah. I wouldn't necessarily advocate, hey, let's publish what everybody in the congregation is giving.
Sure.
But I do advocate individuals having an individual coach who can work with them and say, what is going on in your spiritual life? Or an accountability, if we want to think of it that way. Sure. Who is someone that you can speak truth into your life and encourage you in this journey?
Okay.
That's what I would advocate. But sure. I would agree that I don't... Yeah. Comparison is not healthy for this either.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I hope that when people are doing stewardship, whether it's giving of their gifts or giving of their money, that they're doing it joyfully. That's a big part of it for me, not out of obligation, not because you feel like you have to. Maybe there is a little bit of that in there, but that you're doing it because you want to. I hope that that is what's happening. And I know that, again, back to when money is tight and you're like, I really don't want to let go of this $10, that you still... do, and that it's like it turns into a joyful thing, that something else, something good will come out of that. That's my hope. My hope is that it's done joyfully.
Yeah.
Even when sometimes that's hard.
Yeah, well, and...
Or hard to get up on a Sunday morning super early to be at church, and you were doing things Saturday night that lasted too long, you didn't go to bed early, and you're tired, and you get up Sunday, and you come anyway.
Yeah.
And hopefully something sparks... joy that morning.
Yeah. There's another parable that Jesus tells about the two sons of a man, and he tells both of them to go work in the field, and one of them says, no, I'm not going to do that, and then eventually goes and works anyway. And then the other one says, yes, I'm going to do that, but then doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And, the question is, which one is serving the father? And, I think even if you're starting from a place of this is an obligation and I have to do it, the practice of doing it is... a process to develop that joy.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes time. And I was not good at this going through college and going through the first couple congregations that I served while in seminary. I had lots of excuses and lots of reasons. I have zero income while I'm doing a lot of these things. There are lots of reasons that I could say, like, oh no, I can't afford to give. But I had people who spoke truth into my life and helped, encouraged me on that process. And I'm not great at it, but I strive to be better at it because I want to be generous, not because I want to be impressive, not because I want to please God more, but because I know that these are resources that I only have because God has given them to me first.
Yep.
Okay. There we go. Let's talk about recommendations.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right.
I still have no jingle. Don't ask.
Gosh, Katie.
All right. So I've got a recommendation for us today.
All right.
In honor of our theme of stewardship. This morning or whenever it is that you're listening to this podcast, again, I assert that you listen to this first thing in the morning. But that's fine. Whenever you listen to this.
Maybe there you stay up all night waiting for it. Like it's Christmas morning.
I'm too excited to sleep. So Beyond Sunday is going for this moment to be your personal stewardship coach. And we're going to encourage you, whatever it is that you've got going on this week, think of one thing, whether it's a cup of coffee, a lunch out, or, a quarter tank of gas maybe that you don't need, whatever it might be. Think of one thing that you can do without. Take that money, set it aside, and try putting it in the offering plate at a church this week and see what that feels like and see what the experience is. And we'd love to hear your stories. If this is something that you're doing for the first time or something that you've been doing for years, we would love to hear those stories and potentially be able to share some of those to encourage our other listeners who might be wrestling with this and struggling with this as well.
There you go. That's a good recommendation.
Well, thanks.
All right. So where can people find us, though?
Hey, if you like what you hear on the Beyond Sunday podcast, you can check us out and rate and review us on iTunes or your favorite podcast provider. Be sure to check out our website, www.beyondsundaypodcast.com. And along with Sneakers for Preachers.
Preachers in Sneakers. Oh. And in is just an in.
I would be a fan of Sneakers for Preachers because I need some new shoes. Either way,
a nonprofit.
it's definitely a nonprofit. You can follow us on Instagram at beyond_Sunday.
All right.
I finally get that right?
You did.
All right. Small miracles.
We'll be including photos of Pastor David's wardrobe for you.
That's right.
To judge.
We'll start our own Lord of Life Sneakers and Preachers. No, Preachers.
Preachers and Sneakers.
Preachers and sneakers.
In. The
N.
Letter N.
Preachers and sneakers.
N.
But
N.
N.
N. Oh my gosh.
The letter N.
Oh my gosh.
N. The letter N.
It's brought to you by the letter N.
And the number 4.
Well, thanks for listening. We will see you next week.
Bye.